Welcome to Football Never Sleeps, the weekly Notre Dame YouTube football show that is way more exciting than our countdown music. I'm Eric Hansen. The guy in the other square is Tyler James, and we're here to talk Notre Dame spring football and recruiting and lots of other things. And we're also here to field your questions, and this is a good week to get them in. We've got a lot of topics that are going to make it easy for us to work those into the conversation. So Tyler will give you a tutorial on how to submit your questions, which bells to ring, which things to like, and all that stuff. And then we'll get right into the show. Tyler?
Yeah, we'll ring any bells that are available to you. We promote bell ringing, even if it's not Salvation Army time of year. But I think we'd like you to subscribe to the channel if you have not done that here on YouTube. So hit the subscribe button if you've done that. And you don't have your notifications on, hit the bell, and it will remind you when we have content coming. And then we also would like for you to hit the like button on this video to show some support for the show. It helps get us in front of more eyeballs, and we appreciate that. Appreciate everyone tuning in. If you're new to the YouTube experience, make sure you've clicked through to YouTube, whether it's to their website or an app. Because if you're watching us embedded somewhere, whether that's on social media or on InsideIndySports.com, you won't be able to submit questions to us. Now, obviously, if you just want to watch from somewhere else, that's fine. But we'd love for you to submit questions and chat with us and interact with the other folks that are in the chat as well. If you're looking for that chat a possibility, it should be on the right-hand side if you're on a desktop. And it should be below our talking heads if you're on a mobile device of some sort. So hopefully you can figure that out. And lastly, if you're not a subscriber to InsideIndySports.com, we are still offering a 30-day free trial to first-time subscribers to the website. We hope you consider taking advantage of that. You can use promo code NDYT, which is exclusive to you guys here on YouTube, when you sign up, and you get free access to our premium content, which is a lot of recruiting content these days, spring football coverage, all the stuff we're doing over on the Insider Lounge and discussing, which includes a lot of non-basketball or football coverage. We try to do as much as we can with hockey, which is now over, some men's lacrosse coverage, some baseball coverage, softball every once in a while. You never really know, but we give everything we have to our subscribers. So if you want to make sure you get every ounce of content that Inside Indy Sports is doing, make sure you subscribe to us over on the website. There is a link to sign up for that in our video description below. And if you are already signed up, we appreciate you even more so.
And if you're a women's basketball fan, definitely check out our coverage, not just because I'm writing it, but because we are putting a lot into it right now. And I will Tyler's going to be surprised by this. I will have within the week a feature on Notre Dame's five-star recruit, Kate Koval, 6'5" center from Ukraine, who is playing at Long Island Lutheran High School this year, the number two team nationally in the country.
All right, that's a big get.
It is a big get. I'm excited about that. But now we're going to move into football. We are taking stock of Notre Dame as the Irish start spring practice, then hit the pause button until March 20th. Notre Dame held the first of its 15 spring practices on Thursday before taking a 13-day break for spring break and then restarting the March the Blue Gold game set for 1 p.m. Eastern time on April 20th at Notre Dame Stadium. So we've got a lot of kind of fun topics. We did a really heavy review of the first practice during our podcast and with all our written coverages as well. So we're going to try to spin this forward a little bit and get into some more provocative content rather than just this is what happened. It's kind of our take on where things go from here. And where we're going to start with our opening drive, I did a analysis, if you're a subscriber you can read it, of the 12 players that I want to see more of when Notre Dame practice resumes. I actually could have probably had a top 70 list, and we're going to boil it down to our top three for purposes of tonight, and you guys can jump in too in the comments or the questions as well. But Tyler, I'm going to start with you since you may have read my story and already know what I'm thinking.
Well, I didn't want to ruin the surprise, so I held off on the story so we could I could have live reaction to you on YouTube, because what's better than live reaction? My list. Let's go one at a time, and then you can agree if that's worthy, or maybe you have a counter to something else, or someone that plays that position, something like that. My first one was Chris Mitchell. He's the wide receiver that came to.
Now, are you starting at one or starting at three?
I guess I'm starting at one.
Okay. All right.
He's someone that I had high expectations for. I still do. I think Notre Dame has high expectations for him as well. I wanted to see if he can be the playmaker that he was at Florida International. Like, can what he showed at FIU translate to Notre Dame? What does that speed look like in Notre Dame's offense? How does he change the way Notre Dame's passing game can operate as a deep downfield threat? So he's someone that I want to see a lot of this spring. I don't know that I saw a ton of – he had some flashes in the first spring practice, but it wasn't like, oh, my God, who is number 10? But I think there's reason to be optimistic there, but he's someone that I want to continue to monitor as we move forward in the spring.
So my number one player – and some of the people at the top of my list surprised me a little bit. You know, you kind of think about it, and then when you actually make the list, it's a little bit different. But Chris Mitchell also topped my list. That field receiver position is so important. Whenever Notre Dame's had a receiver that can take a top off the defense, it's opened everything else up in their offense. And Chris Mitchell has that kind of speed. Now, spring is going to really help us understand whether that translates to the FBS level and into actual production. You know, it wasn't until last year that he was – put up huge numbers. I mean, he went from around 370 receiving yards to over 1,100 last year and 64 catches. And so given who Notre Dame's cornerbacks are, and I know we have a cornerback question coming up and we'll get to that a little bit. But knowing who Notre Dame's cornerbacks are, they are going to get tested. There's years Notre Dame's cornerbacks wouldn't have tested them. This is a spring practice where we should get a pretty good idea of how that speed might translate with Chris Mitchell. So, yeah, I mean, he's not the only one that has speed, that has Marcus Freeman excited, but he's the one that has proven production mixed right with that. And so, you know, I think the hope for the Notre Dame coaches is that there will be other guys. The guy that surprised me a little bit in how he looked, just because he wasn't particularly – productive last year as a receiver, but was as a kickoff returner, was Jaden Harrison. You know, I was like, oh, number two. Okay.
Yeah.
He caught my eye. Again, I'm not a big number memorizer. The first day of practice, I'm looking at those because a lot of guys switch positions and some people memorize, but I have my cheat sheet and I like to sometimes not know, because then you're like, wow, I remember Julian Love's first training camp practice and going, who's 27? That guy's pretty good. So, okay, who's number two?
I was probably like, that's the Julian Love guy I keep telling you about.
Yeah, you did say he was going to be – he was no three-star, and you were correct.
So number two on my list was Jordan Clark. Now, maybe that's a little inflated by the fact that we didn't get to see him really at all in the first practice. But he was someone that I really wanted to get eyes on this spring to get a sense for, okay, is he the surefire answer for Notre Dame at nickelback? That's what he was brought in with an attempt to do out of Arizona State. Can he be as productive as Thomas Harper was? Can he allow Notre Dame to play nickel as much as it would like to and sometimes is required to? And if not, does Notre Dame have to consider other options? They have sort of three cornerbacks for two starting quarterback spots on the outside, it seems like, with Benjamin Morrison, Jaden Mickey, and Christian Gray. Do they consider moving one of those guys inside if Jordan Clark isn't what they were hoping for at nickelback? But I'm not going to rule Jordan Clark out yet. That's why I want to see more of him. So that's why he's got a blank slate for me. And we'll see what he can do this spring and how valuable he can be to the Notre Dame defense, because I think that position is very important.
Jordan Clark made my top 12, but he did not make my top three. What I'll add to that is I agree with Tyler. Notre Dame had the number one pass efficiency defense in the country since 1990. That really is the pass defense stat, not passing yards, that really measures how well you play pass defense. And my question with Jordan Clark is he going to be physical enough? Thomas Harper was a physical corner or physical nickel. And how teams will exploit you playing a lot of nickel a lot of times is they'll run the ball and they'll take advantage of the lack of physicality in your nickel player. At 5'10", 180, I'm really curious to see how that works out. Now, Notre Dame has some other options, and they could certainly move somebody inside. Marcus mentioned Clarence Lewis, who played some last year. He's 6'200". I mean, he's a bigger nickel. Mm-hmm. And then there's Micah Bell, who's lightning fast, but is kind of Jordan Clark size. So my number two, I think, will surprise you and maybe surprise you guys over making comments and questions, is CJ Carr. And the reason I put him that high on the list is I think we're taking him a little bit for granted how much talent, pedigree, mental toughness, emotional maturity is in that package. And then I think he's got the right alignment of quarterbacks, coach, and offensive coordinator to bring that out in him. You know, it's funny, since he's committed, this is his third offensive coordinator, or a third person lined up to be offensive coordinator. Four string quarterback, we'll see what this year brings, but my expectation is he's going to be in the conversation to be the starter in 2025, and we're not going to be talking about a portal alternative as long as there's not surprise departures and, you know, severe injuries.
Yeah, I think that's good. I want to see more of CJ Carr. I think I didn't have him as high on my list just because I don't expect him to impact the season. I think he's an intriguing player and certainly a very big piece in what lies ahead for Notre Dame's future. We believe that Riley Leonard will mark the end of Notre Dame's constant hunt for a starting quarterback in the transfer portal with the quarterback recruiting that it's been able to do in recent years. And CJ Carr is a big reason why that there's some confidence there. What does that look like come the fall, even next spring? Who knows for sure? But I think that CJ Carr, I thought he looked good. He was committed to Notre Dame for so long. He wasn't like a guy that was rising up the rankings. I think he was just such a well-known name for so long that sometimes maybe the luster wears off a little bit. But then when you get to see him in a Notre Dame uniform, I think it maybe will start all over for Notre Dame fans and reporters alike.
I think when you watch him, if you wandered into the practice and you knew nothing about Notre Dame's team, you wouldn't be positive about which one of those guys was 1, 2, 3, and 4 just watching them throw. The one thing though is Riley Leonard looks like everybody's big brother. I mean, he is physically bigger than those other guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Or about 217. Okay, who is your number three?
All right, well, speaking of physically big guys, my number three is Tosh Baker, the right tackle. Is he good enough to be Notre Dame's starting right tackle? Can he finally cement himself as a full-time starter at Notre Dame? Will he be challenged by Emil Wagner this spring? Will there be not enough confidence to move forward without bringing someone else in? I think Tosh Baker, which seems weird, someone with so much experience, I think I'm a little less confident in Tosh Baker than Charles Jagusa, even though I don't think Charles is like lit the world on fire in the Sun Bowl, but the fact that he was able to get out there as a freshman, as a starting left tackle in a bowl game, I think is impressive. I think he has a bright future, even if maybe he probably shouldn't be playing left tackle for a program at the caliber of Notre Dame so early in his career. But that's sometimes the way the recruiting cycles work, and some guys turn into guards rather than tackles. But Tosh Baker, he didn't have a great practice from the small glimpses we see. Obviously, they're not in pads. I don't want to overvalue some of the things that Jordan Botello did against him, but I do think that he's someone I want to see improvement from in the spring. I think it's important for a guy that's been here for so long to show, like, hey, this right tackle spot is mine. You guys can fight over all the other spots. And so he has an opportunity to do that. Will he do that? We will see.
Yeah. And again, practice one didn't give us a ton of data, a ton of new data, just based on that they weren't in pads yet. Mm-hmm. Although it was more physical for first practice than I kind of expected it to be. I wrestled with putting my thing together, and I thought, am I going to have like 9 offensive linemen in my top 12? Right. And then I ended up putting just one, and it's kind of a bizarre one, and he's kind of in the middle of that list, and it's Billy Shrouth. And I think some of it is because he gives off Quentin Nelson vibes. Again, there's players that I get stuck on, and sometimes I'm really right about them, like Xavier Watts, and I'm glad that I stuck with that. And there's times like Darnell Yule that I'm way off. but I do feel really good about Billy Shrouth and where he's going. And the whole offensive line is going to be interesting to watch. Now, the number 3 guy on my list is a guy that surprised me. And it kind of couples with your number 3 pick, and it's Jordan Botello.
Okay.
Jordan had his best regular season game, maybe of his career, consistently against Stanford, then was the defensive MVP in the Sun Bowl. And then his first practice, again, in a kind of skewed format, he looked pretty good. There's a couple other things I put with that that make me intrigued about Jordan. One is that he got invited back because Notre Dame is tight on numbers. And they didn't invite everybody back, including some guys that played a lot for them on both sides of the ball that were graduate students, did not get an invite back. And the fact he took the invitation up and didn't say, I want to start over, I need new scenery, leads me to believe he's willing to put in the work. I mean, he's bigger now. He's in the 260s. And just being at the same position for 2 years in a row, I think is going to help him. So I want to see if my instincts are right about Jordan Botello maybe turning the corner.
All right, cool. Matt D in our question, in our comments, said he agrees about Billy Shrouth. He said he could be a mauler in the upcoming season. He's also taking the stance that CJ Carr has a ton of talent, which I think many of us would agree for, but appreciate Matt D for chiming in. I have some questions that I thought we could get to, Eric.
Okay.
Actually, let's start with a couple statements that we can turn into questions. Irish fan to start the show said the money and the Mac are back. Thank God it's Monday. Do you think you're the money or the Mac, Eric?
I think he knows because we were talking about it on the last show or on the podcast about the new linebacker names. And I think you were the money and I think I was the Mac. I think okay. I think that's what we decided. I don't want to be the Rover.
Okay.
That sounds like a dog.
I need to remember my position. William Dwyer says, I am concerned about numbers at cornerback, strong starters, but an injury away from trouble. Do you agree with that statement?
In the spring, a little bit, but I think we're not counting everybody. You know, we talked about 3 guys to play 2. Clarence Lewis can be a full-time cornerback. That gives you 4. Micah Bell is coming on. That's 5. Chance Tucker, we're not sure what's going on with him. He wasn't at the first practice. I shouldn't say he wasn't at the first practice. We didn't see him at the first practice, but he is on the roster. That's 6. And then you have 2 freshmen coming in. I don't think either of them are Ben Morrison, Jaden Mickey type freshmen that would play early, but they are good prospects for the future. Probably I like Moore a little bit better than of Moore and Hobbs.
Yeah.
So that gives you 8. I'm okay with that. And in a pinch, certainly Rod Heard II could be moved there, and Jordan Clark could play corner as well, I think. But I do see your concern because you see the practice reports and you see these walk-ons playing some pretty valuable spring reps, and you say, where are all the corners? So I can understand your concern, William.
Yeah, and that was something I noted, in like, man, there is a drop-off here. Isaiah Dunn is a walk-on. He's not terrible. Like, I mean, if he had to play in a game, it wouldn't be the best-case scenario by any stretch, but he would put him out there, and you wouldn't be like, what's that kid doing on scholarship? I think that he would sort of fit in. So I think the numbers there are okay. Certainly you would like to have some more experience there behind those guys, but I think that's probably not very frequent across college football that you have a bunch of backup corners that have played much. So I think, I mean, someone like Clarence Lewis, though he may be maligned from fans of having bad experiences in the past, like, I think that's sort of a luxury in college football. I don't know that you're going to have a lot of corners that have as much experience as him that you're not necessarily relying on, but could step up when needed. So I think I'm very interested to see like what sort of next step Jaden Mickey takes. And then Christian Gray is someone I think very highly of. So I think both those two could have very big impacts for Notre Dame come next season. All right. Len asks, is Rocco Spindler 100% recovered from his injury?
He was out there doing everything in practice. Now, again, they weren't doing full pad work. I will say this, Len, the first two groups up on March 20th that we'll have interviews with are offensive and defensive line. And so we'll have the position coaches. Rocco will probably be there so we can get it right out of his mouth. But all along, the expectation was his knee injury was one that would not limit him in spring practice. Marcus didn't mention anything about him being limited in the press conference. So my assumption, until Rocco tells us differently, is that he's 100%.
Yeah, I mean, he could be like 97% or something like that, where I think he's probably
97% tonight.
he's probably someone who they will be monitoring closely to make sure like the workload isn't too much. And I think that's probably the way that he may be limited in some ways. But I don't think he would be out there if he wasn't able to give it as much of a go as he did, because, I mean, he has experience. So it's not like he needs to be out there for the first practice of spring. And when you're talking about the way the spring set up, like, of all times to miss the first practice, this would have been it, right? You're buying yourself basically 2 weeks off if you miss the first spring practice this year because of spring break and when the next spring practice is. So I think he's if he's not 100, he's very close, and he is in position to continue to battle for a starting spot there at one of the guard spots. All right, Jeffrey Stevens asked, did it seem a little odd that Luke Talich's scholarship was not made public prior to the Marcus Freeman press conference last Thursday? Usually these things are celebrated during a team meeting and made public pretty dang quick.
I'll tell you what, Fighting Irish Media does some incredible content, and this was a missed opportunity for them because maybe everybody was so maybe they were so expectant of it. Right. It wasn't like this huge surprise and deep breath. No, I'm teasing about that. I was surprised about that just kind of came up in a question in a press conference. However, we have been touting the fact that we thought this was going to happen. This isn't a surprise to anybody.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't asked around of like how he learned of it, Luke himself. So maybe it wasn't like a big hullabaloo, and maybe it was just a conversation. I don't know the timeline either. I mean, it could have happened in December for all we know for sure. Like, this is something we were expecting to happen. So I don't know that we were like asking a lot of questions about it. But to get confirmed here in the spring, sort of how it played out. I mean, Marcus Freeman seems he's someone that's very media friendly. And I think
the beat media didn't have any access to Marcus from the Sun Bowl until now. Right. we had some assistant coaches.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
We had players and we had Denbrock and Warren Lando, and Max Bulla, but we did not have Marcus. So sometimes that's why that happens.
But still, I get Jeffrey's point. Like, what?
Yeah,
the Fighting Irishman. You didn't do some video of like this is how it wasn't revealed to him or whatever. I don't know how it was done. Go ahead.
Didn't Brian Kelly get the name of one of those guys wrong one time?
That sounds like something he would
I'm pretty sure it was.
I don't remember.
Maybe they were worried. Yeah, Marcus usually gets the names right of the guys.
All right, we got another one here from Jeffrey Stevens. Is Eli Raridan okay? Some indications that he had light work during the first practice.
He did have light work, and I don't think that there's anything sinister about it. I mean, he was out there with full gear, you know, the shells and the shorts that everybody in the helmet that everybody else had, except for the guys that are completely out. And that's something that we'll certainly follow up on when the practice restarts next week. We'll get Marcus Saturday of next week, and we will get, as I mentioned, position coaches, but not his position coach. But it didn't seem Marcus would have brought that up if there was, because he had a list and he was proactive about who the injured guys were, because he knew I was going to ask about that. So that saved me a question.
And so, I mean, I think it's still something we'll have to continue to monitor just because of his injury history. I think he should be. I haven't heard of anything that suggested is anything serious beyond just not being able to go for the full practice. All right, those are all the questions I have. If you guys have some more questions, feel free to send them in. Eric and I have some more topics prepared, but we would love to hit on whatever you guys would like us to discuss as well. So go ahead and send them in and chime in if you hear something we say that makes you think of something else too.
So the next place I'd like to go is quarterback competition, what we saw and how we expect things to unfold. Mm-hmm. So, Tyler, I'll let you give just a real brief synopsis and then we'll get into our provocative questions.
Yeah, I thought Riley Leonard and Steve Angeli split reps with the number one offense. They both took some reps with the number ones and number twos. I think Leonard was almost always the first one. It was the first time through. Not that that's surprising, but just for accuracy's sake. And then Minchie and Carr were behind them. I thought they all looked fairly good. I mean, I think everyone had a pretty good practice. I wrote a little bit about Riley Leonard being off target a bit early, just when they were doing one-on-ones, and his receivers weren't necessarily running wide open either. But even then, he was missing here and there in terms of maybe some deep throws and some – it just wasn't like, oh, my gosh, there's Riley Leonard. He's awesome. And then he got better as the practice wore on. I thought Steve Angeli was maybe more solid throughout, maybe not as big of ups and downs. And then Minchie and Carr, I think, showed some flashes as well. So I think I don't know. I would need to do some studying of rosters, but it's a pretty good 1-4 quarterback depth chart that Notre Dame has. And I don't know that they've had much that looked like it in recent years that I can remember.
I mean, CJ Carr's better than Brennan Clark when Brennan Clark was like 1 or 2. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, think about some of these depth charts in some of the years.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to have some fun projections. So will the order be Leonard, Angeli, Minchie, Carr after the Blue Gold game?
Yes. I think that'll be that. It doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean, depends how you're looking at it, but to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense to jump Carr over Minchie, because it just gives another reason for Kenny Minchie to be like, well, why, what am I staying here for? If
right.
One spring in, you're moving the freshman ahead of me already. Especially when Notre Dame is potentially in jeopardy of losing Steve Angeli, if he's not going to be the starter, I think that makes even less sense to have CJ Carr jumping Kenny Minchie as well.
I agree. I think Notre Dame is going to play the smart. I'm not even sure that they'll announce who the number one is after after spring practice, although it was kind of obvious last year who was number one after the blue-gold game. But I do think it'll be that order, and I think Notre Dame's not going to be in a in an urgent place to define that to either us or to those guys. I think they'll just move into the summer with the status quo. Okay, same order at the start of training camp in August. And what I'm then kind of asking too is, would somebody leave the roster in the second transfer portal window?
If I had to bet, I would say yes. It just seems when you have four quarterbacks, the likelihood, and I mean, if we're being realistic, we're only talking about two guys, right? Like CJ Carr as a freshman is not going to transfer out, and Riley Leonard as a senior who has dollar signs for reasons he's be, for being here. Those two guys aren't leaving by the start of training camp in August. So will Steve Angeli or Kenny Minchie leave? If you're talking about two of those guys, I would just say yes, just because of the era we're in. There's not anything that I know for certain that makes me believe that they will, but I just think, like, what are the odds that they both stay? Like, it just doesn't seem very – it seems like a low probability in this current era of college football. So I would predict that one of those guys was gone. Now, if you made me predict one, that I think that's where it's even trickier.
I'm not going to make you predict which one, but
okay,
if you want to, you can. But I usually sort of shy away from that.
I'm sort of the opinion that Angeli is just so close to his degree that he it makes the most sense for him to stick around. And if something happens to Riley Leonard, he's the next guy in, where I don't know that Kenny Minchie would necessarily know that for certain. If Angeli leaves, or regardless, Minchie still has a longer way to go.
Where I'm torn about predicting somebody leaving the roster is if it were Angeli, well, either Angeli or Minchie, it doesn't put them in a position to be a starter somewhere and easily, because they miss spring practice with that new team. Mm-hmm. It would have to be a team that probably lost their starter to a torn ACL in spring practice or some long-term injury, where a team was desperate for a starting quarterback. And then I could see maybe one of the Notre Dame quarterbacks. Yeah. But if I'm Angeli, if I'm going through spring, if I'm still number two, because again, those two guys behind him are really good and they're going to be pushing. If he's still number two, I play it out. I try to get as close to my Notre Dame degree as I can. Mm-hmm. And then I can jump in the portal in December of next year.
Yeah, so, I guess I agree with that, and I buy that. I think that's logical thinking. I think we both think, I mean, I guess I won't speak for you. I think Tyler Buchner's a pretty bright kid, and he left. Now, maybe that's just the Tommy Reese of it all, that was such a very strange circumstance. But
if my better judgment, Tyler Buchner left. If he had asked me, but he didn't.
But that's what I'm saying. If Tyler Buchner, of all people, would leave, why wouldn't any, like, why would we rule out that all these other guys wouldn't leave either?
I'm not ruling it out. I mean,
right. Yeah, no, I know you're
the era we're in.
No. Yeah, yeah,
but I think that carrot of being the starter in 2025 hooks them a little bit, because they know Riley Leonard's going to be gone, which Hartman was going to be gone too. But I think Steve Angeli saw the value of being around Sam Hartman. I mean, he talks about it all the time. And again, the other two are so young in their career. I think they all three could envision themselves as the starter in 2025. And if, you know, I don't think Deuce Knight is going to be polished enough to come in and challenge them that, you know, for the 2025 quarterback too. So I think they know that there's talent coming. And some of it depends on their relationships with Gino Gadduli and Mike Denbrock too. How do they feel like they're being developed with those two guys? So they'll have that spring to make that decision. The portal reopens like the weekend before the blue gold game for 15 days. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Chris W points out an injury could make a big difference as well. Like, Absolutely. Certainly if one of these guys get injured, that changes the whole perspective, whether that's in practice or in the season, which we'll get to what we think will happen going into the season. But there's a lot of time for someone to get banged up and really change the trajectory of how this quarterback competition is going.
I'll tell you, one of the weirdest transfers was Everett Golson, because it really, from everybody's appearance, he had won the competition, then transferred. You know, he beat out Malik Zaire. It wasn't announced that he did, but that was – I talked to Brian Kelly privately, and that was his assumption that he had won it. And then he transfers to Florida State. So that was weird. So you just never know. How about during the season? Could you see there be movement in the depth chart during the season or during training camp?
Maybe during the season, less so. I mean, I guess during, like, I think if, I don't know. I guess that would be the time that I think you could move Carr ahead of Minshew if you felt like that was the best thing for you. Like if it were becoming clear to Notre Dame's coaching staff that, hey, CJ Carr could be our starter next year, it probably would make more sense for him to be taking varsity reps or watching Leonard in practice than taking scout team reps, would be my guess. So maybe that would be, and then obviously that depends on, well, is Steve Angeli here? Do you think Steve Angeli's back next season? Because that obviously would impact what your projections may be for CJ Carr next year. So all these things sort of rely on each other in terms of how you sort of, figure out what path may all go down. But, I think that would be the time. There could be a chance that whether in August or during the season that CJ Carr could maybe leave. I don't expect Riley Leonard to lose the starting job unless he gets hurt. I think that the top end is pretty secure in my opinion, unless something goes very, very awry and doesn't go as planned.
I think the 3 and 4 distinction is important depending on how Notre Dame plans to do the scout team quarterback, because I think that's a huge disadvantage to a kid if he's only the scout team quarterback, not learning the Notre Dame offense. But then if he's getting like only mental reps in the varsity portion, then is that really helping him? Should they split scout team duty between 3 and 4?
Right. Yeah. If you have all four of them, then maybe you can split. Like this is Minshew's week. Next week's Carr's week. And you go back and forth, and maybe that's better for both of them if all four are around.
Do you use Teddy Rezac's brother? I can't remember his name. Anthony.
Yeah.
Or is that not giving you enough of an accurate look? Unless So those are all the things that I think are questions we need to ask and so forth. But I think that, I mean, it is significant sometimes, at least in the Brian Kelly era, that 3-4 differentiation was important. Okay. Last thing on the quarterbacks, thoughts on Drew Pine committing to transfer to Missouri. Do you have any thoughts on that? Or is it a shoulder shrug?
It's kind of interesting. So Missouri has a starter going into next season, right? Brady Cook had a good season last year and will be their starter going in this year. The biggest thing that happened at Missouri was their backup, Sam Horn, had Tommy John surgery. So he's going to be out for at least a year. So essentially Drew Pine's like, I'm a backup this year. And then it puts me at the front of the line to be Missouri starter next year. And even like get a lay of the land and maybe prove to Missouri's coach that he should be the starter going into next year, instead of like being in the same pool of transfers or like, cause I think in theory that maybe Missouri would go to the transfer portal next year. But if he's already in there, he could prove that, hey, you guys don't need to go to the portal again. I'm here. I'll ride this out. So, interested to see where it goes. I don't know. You would think like, I don't know. Like, I guess if there was so much unlimited transferring, I think I just want to go somewhere and play. Right. Like even if I went to the MAC, like that's got to help you. I would, unless you're bad and you're not going to play there. But if you're going to be bad in the MAC, you're probably not going to win the starting job at Missouri or whatever. So, in an interesting decision, and one we'll see if pays off for him. I don't think the Arizona State situation certainly worked out as he had hoped with some injuries there. And I saw some of our reporting from Power Mizzou was that that's our Missouri website on the Rivals Network, that there's some hope that he may get a season of eligibility back because of his injuries from last year. I don't know what the odds of that are, but
he's going to be like 30, which Notre Dame has a kicker that's 30, but seriously, I think he still has to fit it in a 6-year window. He's in that last class that had the COVID thing, but Drew, I mean, I guess there was some guy at Miami that is like 9th year or something crazy, a tight end or something. Okay. Let's move on to offensive line, unless we have questions, Tyler.
We have an offensive line question, so let's throw it in here before we get into the discussion.
Okay.
WV Renovation says, why are all the different publications betting against Spindler? Did Coogan really have a better year than him?
And by different publications, you mean our competitors?
Yeah, I think that's what he means.
And us?
Yeah. I guess you're just trying to say, like, hey, you guys aren't the only ones that feel this way, so why does everyone feel this way?
I don't know that Coogan necessarily had a markedly better year than Spindler. Those guys both struggled. Coogan was the one guy that started every game. Mm-hmm. I think Shrouth is better than both of them, and I thought that last year, but I think I'm going to be right this year. And
you were
just—you
were so clairvoyant. You were right a year advance.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, they do different things. The Coogan is more assignment correct than Spindler. Spindler is a guy that could make you cry for your mommy. I mean, he really—I mean, 6'5". He's in the 320s now, and he's strong and. You just kind of wait for him to all the tumblers to line up for him where he is assignment correct and he can go full speed on every play and he gets everything. And maybe that kicks in for him this year. I mean, linemen aren't all great as freshmen like Joe Alt and Blake Fisher looked like he was going to be. Joe Alt was, you know, Liam Eichenberg didn't tear it up early in his career. Mike McGlinchey didn't either. I mean, it took those guys a while. Even Quentin Nelson wasn't a starter as a freshman and made some mistakes as a sophomore. Mm-hmm. But I think why people bet against Spindler is because of that lack of assignment correctness that seems to have plagued him much of his career. Again, maybe this is the year that it kicks in and he makes fools of everybody.
Yeah, and I think that was something that limited Billy Shrouth's ability to get on the field. So for him to overcome that, but Rocco hadn't, I think is interesting. I think a reason why that's so important is because of the inexperience across the line, right? We're talking about a line that if Pat Coogan is a starter, he's the only returning full-time starter from last year. If Rocco didn't finish the season, but I would still consider him a full-time starter. He just lost the last few games because of injury.
Right. Three games.
So
three and a half.
I personally don't think that there was like a huge difference between the two. I thought they were pretty similar. I don't know the answer to, I guess my read of it is like, well, if Coogan wasn't clearly better than Spindler, then wouldn't they just put Spindler at left guard to compete with Coogan, which they haven't done, at least in front of our eyes. And maybe that's something that'll happen as we move forward in the spring. If Billy,
yeah, Strauss, we didn't see that the true competitions on day one last year either. They moved people around. Coogan wasn't even in the picture at the beginning of spring practice last year.
Right. So I think there's much to be still proven there. I think, to me, it made sense that they run out the same starters from the Sun Bowl. Cause like really what changed, right? I mean, Rocco Spindler got healthy, but was he ready to be the bona fide right guard? Do you want to reward Billy Shrouth for finishing the season strong and having worked next to Ashton Craig? I think, if Pat Coogan is the guy that is more, assignment sound, doesn't it make sense to have him next to an inexperienced left tackle? And then we're talking about an inexperienced center too. So Maybe that's what ends up playing out there, but I don't know. I can't tell you. I can't speak for why everyone else feels that way. I was more intrigued by Pat Coogan than Rocco Spindler last year, but I don't know that either of them was significantly better than the other. So I don't think there's a clear gap there. So I guess it would be surprising that sort of everyone, if that is what everyone thinks, everyone's sort of on the same page with the Spindler and Coogan debate.
So for people that don't remember who the starters were in the Sun Bowl, who lined up as the first team on last Thursday was Tosh Baker at right tackle, Billy Shrouth at right guard, Ashton Craig at center, Pat Coogan at left guard, and then Charles Jagaza at left tackle. And then they filled a complete second team. The third team cheated and had Emil Wagner on both the second and the third team. He switched sides and was the left tackle with the third team. So two questions as we kind of spin forward. Is it too early to think that Notre Dame should peruse the transfer portal just to see what's in there in late April, early May? For tackles.
Right. My understanding is Notre Dame did that in the previous window. So if they did in the previous window, I guess you can't say it's too early, right? Like they already did. I think you can't base it off the one practice and say, okay, yeah, we definitely need to do that again. But I think that Notre Dame's decision to not take one was probably more based on who was available in the portal versus or could come to or could or would come to Notre Dame than like absolute certainty that it has the starting offensive tackles that it needs for next season. So I think that would probably still be the same case going into the May transfer portal window. Unless Charles Jagasa and Tosh Baker just really impressed this spring and you see a really good offensive line. And nobody leaves too. Part of me, like, I would sort of like it. A perfect world, in my opinion, would be you bring in a starting left tackle that's proven, and then you move Jagasa over to right tackle. I think that would be ideal, but I don't know if that would happen. That would be something that I would be interested in seeing.
Tosh Baker, why do you stick around then?
Right. Yeah. That's a reason that Tosh Baker wouldn't stick around. And even if maybe Emil Wagner beats him out, then I don't know if Tosh Baker sticks around too. That's my view of the tackle situation. That was one of my, well, I did the questions at one question, biggest question at each position that can be answered this spring. And that was like, does Notre Dame have its starting offensive tackles on campus right now? And I don't know the answer to that. And I think for Notre Dame's sake, they need to have an answer to that by April 20th. And regardless what the answer is, that'll inform what they do moving forward.
Okay. And then my other question.
Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. So not just to shut you up.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
Well, that's not shutting me up. Yeah. If you're not talking, that's just going to give me more time to talk.
So my other question was, though, Garrabee Lambert, what you know of him, 6'7", yeah. 300 pounds at last report. He's probably bigger now. Do you think he has the talent and is far enough along in his development that he could challenge for a two deep spot in the tackle depth chart when he arrives in June?
My intuition is no. But that also depends on like, what are the two, who's still around by then, right? Does Tosh Baker leave? Cause I think the two deeps right now at tackle are pretty set. Like, I don't think Garrabee Lambert's going to come in and knock off Emil Wagner or Sullivan Absher as the backup tackles under the current depth chart that we have. If someone leaves, then I think he certainly could. But I think he has some development that needs to happen. But I crazier things have happened. Like Boubacar Traore, all I kept hearing was that he was a project, and then he comes to Notre Dame out of the same school, and he was like, whoa, like that kid's got a future.
Now Who's 51?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those guys where you don't study the roster and you find out like, wait a minute, who's that guy? So maybe that can happen for Gurbi Lambert. I don't think that is the case. I mean, we talk about Joe Alt. Like that wasn't the case for Joe Alt either. Like he got to the starting left tackle by default almost. Not that he didn't earn it, but like everyone else is falling out of the race. Because they weren't either good enough or healthy enough. And then he showed everyone that, hey, maybe this should have been my job to begin with. I think it's hard to put that sort of projection on him until you sort of see him and going up against Notre Dame caliber and ACC and Power 5 caliber opponents.
Okay, we are going to move on to
we got a question here from WV Renovation on the offensive line. How big of a concern is Wagner's weight, which was down from last year?
I don't know if it was down from last year. It's 281.
I think it was down from
soaring.
I think it was down from the time they gave us the
January.
Yeah, they gave us the update. Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit. A little bit. I think it'll be more concerning if we get to June and it's still 281 or it's in the 270s.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's a 40-pound difference between him and Tosh Baker and Charles Jaggers. It's a little bit more even. And body mass with as physical as Notre Dame wants to play, it is important. I mean, maybe Emil eventually moves inside, and even then, you know, he's competing with guys that are over 300 pounds there. Mm-hmm. So, but he's a really good athlete, and it's a good question to ask Joe Rudolph and Emil Wagner when we have a chance to talk to them next week. And so I appreciate you throwing that out there, because that's a good thing. Put it in the back of my
mind. I mean, I think it's a concern. It's not that someone can't play at that weight. I think that isn't unreasonable. I think you could pull that off, but he hasn't shown the ability to play at a starter level at that weight yet. So like, if he didn't do it last season in that neighborhood, like if he hasn't made significant gains in the weight room, then how much improvement can he make to sort of overcome that in the last half year?
And as a sense of encouragement, Baker wasn't the biggest guy. I mean, this is the first year I can remember he put on significant weight,
right,
in the offseason, good weight.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the silver lining you could look at it is like, well, he hasn't put on bad weight, right? Like if he hasn't like gone out of his way and just like put on bad weight for the sake of gaining weight and then maybe lost some of his athletic ability or isn't working as hard.
He doesn't have NIL with Raising Cane.
Yeah. So I think I wouldn't rule things out for him, but it's like, okay, what is going to happen that's going to change? I mean, even Zeke Correll, most of his career, he sort of battled like trying to keep on the weight to play center. So
Michael Carmody unsuccessfully.
Yeah. Michael Carmody was in the same boat. So some guys just can't get there. That's something that Notre Dame is going to have to continue to work on with Emil Wagner. And we'll see soon enough if that's too much of a hurdle for him to get over to potentially become a starter.
Okay, we are going to move on to assessing the safety dance. How confident are we that Rod Heard II will reshuffle the depth chart when he enrolls in June as Xavier Watts' sidekick? What are your thoughts on that? Having not seen him play, but knowing his history and the coaching staff's expectation for him and who he's competing against.
Yeah, I mean, I think that job could and should be his. I think he becomes an interesting candidate X factor if the Jordan Clark experiment doesn't work out. It's like, well, should we put Rod Heard at nickelback? Like, that's where he played at Northwestern a lot. And maybe Adon Schuler's or Luke Talich, someone at safety has really stepped up. to be like, hey, we can afford to move Rod Hurd to another spot where maybe we need more help. So I think that I wouldn't rule that out. But I think the intent is for him to come in and be a starting safety next to Xavier Watts. And I'm not going to rule that out until we get a chance to see those guys playing next to each other and together.
Okay. I am going to ask you another safety question. What were your impressions of Adon Schuler and Luke Talich in the first practice?
Yeah, I don't know that either of them did anything in the first practice that changed my opinion of them. I like Adon Schuler a little bit more at this point. I think he's impressed me more from what I've seen of him. Talich is someone who, like, you look at him, you're like, wow, who is that guy? But I haven't necessarily seen him make the same kind of impact on practices that Adon Schuler has had. But it's really early with those guys. I mean, those guys have dealt with injuries. Luke Talich played more last year as a special teamer, but like, how much does that really impact what I think of him as a safety? I don't know that it does. I wonder, like, just the way they lined up to start practices, like, Luke Talich was behind Xavier Watts. Is he better suited to play the same spot as Watts than to play alongside Watts? So I would give the nod to Adon Schuler right now. These are two guys that I'm really intrigued by what becomes of them, not just this season, but moving forward in the future, because they certainly could be starting safeties together, I think.
Right. What about you? I think they're also playing to be in the rotation. I think Notre Dame will play four safeties, whether it's rotating or it's niche packages or things.
Yeah. Someone's got to be the Ramon Henderson, right?
Someone's got to be the Ramon Henderson. So Luke Talich has gotten bigger. You know, he was in the one, he had a one at the beginning of his weight last year. He's at 210. Adon Schuler's gone the other way. He was 208 last season. He was more than that last summer coming off of shoulder surgery. He's at 198, so he's a leaner, and I thought he was moving really well. So there are – safety's got numbers. They have – Kenny Urlacher is on campus already as a freshman. Yeah, Ben Minnick, who – a lot of us kind of liked last spring until he got hurt in the spring and missed the end of spring. And then you have two freshman safeties that will arrive in June. Of that group and Devin Ford, who's moved over from running back, who do you like out of, you know, once we get past Adon Schuler and Luke Talich, who do you like out of that group? But there's going to be somebody to emerge to challenge those two for a rotation spot. Who do you like?
I would take Minnick ahead of all those guys. I'm not sure it's Urlacher, even though he's here early to get some playing experience in the practices. I don't really see Devin Ford, and I mean, Marcus Freeman sort of spoke about him this way, as someone who's challenging for playing time at safety, right? He was like, we moved him there so he could get better, more work to be a better special teams player. Marcus Freeman didn't even try to sell necessarily his upside as a safety to us. But, I mean, maybe something happens there. I mean, he's a good athlete. I don't think there's any question about that. And he plays with a lot of tenacity on special teams. And even he did some running and blocking roles on offense last year for Notre Dame. I think Tay Johnson and Tay Brown, Benny Powell, the guys coming in the summer as freshmen, are more projects. So I think that all those things sort of led me to Minnick for my answer. Do you have the same answer?
I do at this point. Minnick has the speed and he has more experience. Long term, out of that group, I like Bronte Johnson. I think at some point, at 6'3", as breathtaking athletic as he is, he's going to figure it out. He just didn't play much safety last year, was the quarterback for his high school team. But once he can certainly help them at wide receiver if they need it in a pinch. I think as a safety, you know, we'll hear more about him in 2025 and say, wow, who's that guy?
Right.
He doesn't have a number yet. Okay. Do we want to take questions, jump into recruiting, or continue on with our football stuff?
Well, you gave us a jam-packed hour here, Eric. So I think let's just try to fit some recruiting in, and then we'll maybe save some of the other spring practice stuff till for next week, because we won't have unfortunately we won't have seen another spring practice by the time we get to Football Never Sleeps next week, but we still have plenty of other things that we can talk about. And Eric came up with some good topics, so and I think those will hold, but the recruiting stuff might not hold because it obviously some of that stuff will happen this week.
Well, we're going to start with giving you some tidbits from our heat index. And Tyler, this was Tyler's creation. It always makes me hungry to talk about it. And you say, why? Because it's based on chicken wing sauce. What do they call the level? Scoville scale? Is that what it's?
Yeah, I think Scoville. I think that's something that probably Hot Ones has introduced everyone to. I don't know that anyone knew that term before Hot Ones.
So tell us about the heat index, what people subscribers get for it, and then give us some tidbits that you can share from the heat index.
Yeah, so the heat index is our subscriber exclusive breakdown position by position of Notre Dame's remaining targets in the recruiting class. So right now we have a heat index for the 2025 class. We introduced it last year for the 2024 class. And it's something we sort of continually update as the recruiting cycle goes on. Like Eric mentioned with the heat ratings that are inspired sort of by like spicy wings. The scale goes from mild or plain to mild to medium to hot to extremely hot. Extremely hot is usually reserved for someone I have a Rivals future cast in and someone that I think will eventually commit to Notre Dame, maybe sooner rather than later. Plain is just someone that's just too early to say. Mild is usually someone that there's been some interest expressed, but it doesn't look like they're coming to Notre Dame. And then sort of just increases as you go to medium to hot. Hot is usually someone that we consider a top contender. That Notre Dame is one of he that recruit is one of Notre Dame's top targets, and that Notre Dame is a top contender for that recruit. So yeah, we'll update that position by position as news comes with and scoop comes with those different recruits. One of the latest things that happened last week and then even today, running back James Simon, who's their name's really only running back that they're still recruiting in the 2025 class when they already have Daniel Anderson and Justin Thurman committed. He put Notre Dame in his top seven late last week. And then today he announced his spring visit schedule, which includes a stop at Notre Dame in April. So I moved James Simon up to a medium heat rating last week. And so the fact that he's going to get plans to get up on campus is more evidence that that is a solid heat rating for him, I believe. A couple of receivers that have scheduled visits for the spring, Jerome Bettis Jr., Talon Taylor, Damian Shanklin, he's a defensive end out of Warren Central in Indianapolis. He received an offer from Ohio State, which he has and continues to describe as his dream school. So that could be a bother for Notre Dame moving forward. And so we'll keep monitoring the latest at all the different positions. Those are some of the things that we've talked about last week. But there's all kinds of things. It's always changing. Things are developing. Guys are scheduling visits, and we try to keep it all in one place. Like, you can get all this information in one forum thread that we have pinned to the top of our message board on the Insider Lounge. And even like all the comments and the updates come below. Like, it's just, it's refreshed. Like, here's every quarterback who matters right now. Here's every running back who matters right now. So if you want both informative and sort of an easy breakdown to look at, I think hopefully this is sort of one-stop shopping for you for your recruiting information.
Before I ask you about any other key recruiting visits, I need to know what's the hottest wing sauce you've ever tried.
Oh, I'm not a spicy guy, so I don't know. Like, I guess I'm trying mild? To think. Like, no, not mild. Like, I've had like spicy garlic, I think is pretty high on the list.
When it is not.
If you look at like on the B-dub scale, I think it's
on B-dub scale. The hottest at B-dubs isn't even like the second sauce on Hot Ones.
Well, how many Hot One sauces have you tried?
I tried something in South Carolina called Atomic, and my lips were on fire. Three days later.
I have no interest in that.
Yeah. Well,
I keep my hotness to the heat there, the heat index. So that's where
if you ever heard of the Carolina Reaper pepper, yep. That's in Atomic.
Yeah, that's not my style. I have a story that I could share about my brother, but he'd probably be pretty embarrassed if I said that in front of a live audience. So I'll share that.
Okay, well then share privately. Any visits of note that you want to share then.
Yeah,
visits, not chicken wing visits.
Yeah, so I mentioned Jerome Bettison, Talon Taylor scheduling visits. Now that Notre Dame's on spring break, there's nothing upcoming immediately. Once they get back later this month, they'll have some more guys coming in there. Deuce Knight, I think, is very important. Is planning to be here. I think he will get here like late March 20th and will be on campus for a few days. The Notre Dame's quarterback commit, who they are trying to keep committed. And away from the likes of Alabama and Mississippi, who continue to try to come after him. Mark Zachary, a corner out of Indianapolis that Notre Dame is continuing to recruit and has a very good chance at, is supposed to get here later this month as well. So a lot of visitors. The visit cycle will heat up once again late this month and all the way leading into the Blue-Gold game. So a lot to look forward to and a lot to continue to monitor over on the Insider Lounge, where we have – even in addition to the Heat Index, if you have not been a subscriber to us, we have it. It's pretty easy to access some of this information. We have just a thread running visitor lists for the 2024 calendar year, and you got everyone there. And we update it as we learn of names and confirm them. And so another easy way to follow what Notre Dame is doing.
Right. Okay. The last thing I want to ask you about, and then we can take a last call for questions, is the Pot of Gold Day is coming up on Sunday, St. Patrick's Day. It's also Selection Sunday. What's the significance of that date? And it's a recruiting event for Notre Dame. How well do you think that plays on a national scale? Do you think it's as big of a deal as maybe it looks like on social media?
I'll start with the last one first. I think it's a pretty big deal. Like it's a way for Notre Dame to sort of carve out like a day on the calendar. Like other than games, like I think it's kind of hard for like one school or one program to sort of be like the talk of college football recruiting for a day. And I don't know that anyone can really compete with Notre Dame's tie to St. Patrick's Day. So that's how Notre Dame has done that. I think it's a smart decision to link those two ideas. Pot of Gold Day is a tradition that predates its current sort of strategy. It used to be just like a giant mailing event where they would send a bunch of mailers and to kids that they were interested in. But now it is used to offer kids that are sort of a class ahead. So this year it'll be 2026 class recruits. Notre Dame will offer kids at every position. And it does matter because I believe the numbers are, I was counting before we started the show, 7 of Notre Dame's 17 verbal commitments in the 2025 class right now were all offered on St. Patrick's Day of last year. So it does, like, obviously that's not the reason those guys committed, but it catches their attention. It's a part of the process. And it's just a way for Notre Dame to stand out. And some of these guys will have, like, they all already have a pretty good idea that they're going to get an offer. Some guys, it won't be as clear to them until they receive the offer. So I think there may be a misperception that like they're just starting the recruitment of these kids now. No, these are guys that Notre Dame has had conversations with and communication with, but this is sort of marks the beginning. Like, hey, we're really interested in you moving forward. And now you have a scholarship offer, and Notre Dame has kept its offer number a little bit lower than it would have otherwise, just because it wants to make this day a special day. And really earmark those guys, and the whole coaching staff will take to talk to recruits that day. Marcus Freeman will have guys that he talks to, and that'll be coming Sunday. So we'll have plenty of coverage of that over on InsideIndySports.com and the Insider Lounge.
We've gone deep into overtime. Do we want to take any more questions, or do I just want to compliment everybody?
I think you can just compliment everybody. We had a basketball question, but it's about women's basketball, and we can talk about that next week because they won't have played any games between now and then. So if we want to talk about that a little bit next week, we can. But I think that should do it for the questions so far.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody, for putting up with us for over an hour. And for tuning in, for hitting the bell and liking us, and not just mentally liking us, but hitting the like button. And don't forget about the free trial that's below our heads for using code NDYT for a 30-day free trial of InsideNDSports.com if you're not subscribed already. If you are subscribed, give that code to your next-door neighbor and see how popular you are.
Yeah, give him a little bit of an early Easter present. How about that? We don't plan to have an Inside Indy Sports podcast this week, so this will be the only way you hear our voice unless you tune into Eric on WSBT Radio. But we'll be back next week with Football Never Sleeps again. And thanks for everyone for tuning in, and have a good week.